Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Big Show. I'm Jeff Gamet. I'm your interim host sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And it's summertime, so we are finally getting around to starting our Summer of Fun shows. What that means is that we're changing up the format a little bit because Ewan's not here to stop us. And it's only through the summer that we do this. So here's the deal. What we're doing is picking some topic that we think would be fun to discuss, and foregoing the dearth of technology news that the summer often brings. And so our topic this week is the Foodie Flashback Takeover.
Yep. And so in other words, yes, Samsung did release something, but they didn't change that much, and we just want to talk food.
Yeah, food makes much more sense.
Right? Yep. Well,
summer and food goes together like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep. So, yeah, so that's what we're doing today. Since we're talking about the Foodie Flashback Takeover, I would be remiss if I didn't start off by saying, Patrice, how are you? And I have really missed seeing you.
Oh, I've missed the show. I've missed you guys too. Like, I'm good. I moved. I still don't have proper, fully functioning, fast internet. I'm like using a LTE router right now. Mm-hmm. 4G, fun, but works. I had to ditch my ISP there seems to be some issue with the connection, and they couldn't figure it out. And I mean, that's okay, that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Their communication sucked, and that was the point where I was like, okay, if you can't communicate with me properly, and I've told you repeatedly what I'm expecting, then it's after 3 weeks, it's time to go. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. So I did.
That seems
and
reasonable.
I switched to a different one. They were much nicer. Let's see if they can actually. It's the company. So, like here in Austria, like I wanted to go through a, like kind of a MVNO reseller kind of mm-hmm. thing because I am already with them, and their support usually was really, really good and fast, and they're a small company and stuff, so they're a little bit more responsive. And that was a mistake. So I went with the big company that actually provides the line, and let's see if they can figure it out. So I don't know what it is. We'll see. But they were like, immediately were like, oh yeah, we have this LTE thing. I mean, you don't pay anything. Like, it's like a deposit, security deposit of like $80 and like just return it, you get it back. I'm like, okay. And like, everything else is for free. So I'm like, okay, I'll take it.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's what I'm using, and it's 20 Mbit. Like, it's not great.
Well, it's enough to do the show.
It's enough to do the show and work, and that's the important part. I mean, I've been working, like, I've just used my hotspot. I'm like, through that company, like that MVNO, I had 150 gigs of like data still available, because they do like a rollover thing, and I have 50 gigs a month anyway and stuff like that. So it's like, okay, I used that up, and they gave me another 100, so like that wasn't a problem, but it just wasn't great. That's really, really limited. Like, that's the interesting thing for me. Nothing works at home. Like, all the HomeKit stuff, the automations, like, nothing really works.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's like you're back in the States.
Mm-hmm.
So without a functioning internet connection to your house to tell them devices what to do, mm-hmm. they're stupid without it. So even if they're on a Wi-Fi connection within the, like, within the rooms.
Thread, see, I mean, I don't know what it was exactly, but Thread wasn't working at all. So all the Thread devices were not working. The Philips Hue worked, for example. So that was interesting.
Yeah, Philips Hue will continue to work locally, but you may not have all the functionality.
Yeah, I mean, sure, some automations probably didn't work, but like you can turn stuff on and off, and that worked. So I used that, but like the everything on Thread was just broken. I couldn't even access like my vacuum, robot vacuum. Could start it or stop it. Needs an internet connection. Stuff like that. So that sucked.
And so like everyone, that's the modern world for you. If you use too many things that are connected to the internet, when you don't have any internet, they don't work.
Yeah. And I mean, for years, I've not had that problem. So.
Yeah, you might have to do unfathomable things in the 21st century if your internet breaks, like turn light switches on and off, or do vacuuming yourself.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Shocking, isn't it?
That's stone knives and bearskins.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's just horrible.
Yeah. So that was, I mean, on the other hand, I could have just gotten one of those LTE routers or 5G or whatever, and that would have fixed it. But I didn't want to, because that was not like I'm getting a really nice fiber connection. I have everything here, like the cable and everything is there. It's just.
Is the infrastructure provided by the region or the government or whatever, and then they just hook on top of it like they do here?
No. Actually, I have two different connections here in my apartment. So there's a fiber connection from one company, and the other company, that's like Deutsche Telekom, actually, so T-Mobile, basically. They're using like the TV cable, like cable.
Oh, okay.
So I have two different connections, but one's like the cable is slower and worse. So like if I can get a gigabit here, I'll take it.
That'd be quite nice.
Yeah. If it works, it would be nice.
I mean, our problem is we have the infrastructure has been was nationally inbuilt and laid long ago, and so every ISP just hooks on the back of what's available by the by Openreach, the main sort of national provider.
We're stopping the show right now for a second. My dad is visiting, and he didn't turn his ringer off for the show, so I'm going to make him get up and walk over here and wave to everyone on the camera. And he's being a trooper. He's actually getting up off the couch so that he can come over and wave to everyone on the camera. So my dad, he's a trooper. He had eye surgery, and they put gas in his eye. And he can't go back up to where he lives because his eye will pop.
Oh, no.
So until his eye is fixed, he can't come in. So you're going to have to duck down, because that's the camera right there. You have to keep ducking down.
They're seeing the better part of me.
All right. Well, hold on. There we go. There's Dad.
Hey, Justin.
And look, his eyes look pretty much normal.
I got one on the side of my face.
Yeah, he's happy. He has one eye on each side of his face still.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. That's pretty much what you need.
And turn the ringer off. Oh, Dad turned his ringer off. How about that? Anyhow, all right.
So we're pulling an audible and just doing embarrassing stories of Jeff.
We're going to need more than an hour.
We got all day. I have several hours until Dave's show. Too.
Perfect. Yep. Oh, that's right. It's Thursday. Thank you for reminding me. I actually would have forgotten about Dave's show today. Anyhow. All right. Now we can go back to our show where we're pretending like we're talking about food, but actually talking about broadband across Europe and the UK.
Yeah. We haven't even introduced everybody. We just talked about
this stuff. Is still just the Patrice introduction. Well, to be fair, we had a lot of introductions to catch up on for you because you were out.
That's true.
All right.
Yeah, the other thing we want to announce, the Patrice we have actually had for the last little while is actually Scroll Patrice, but Scroll Patrice is cheaper, so we're going with that.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yep. And Ben, thank you for reminding me. I am now at least two episodes behind, and I know the series wrapped up. So I have some viewing to catch up on for Secret Wars. Yep. But speaking of Ben, how are you?
I am great, Jeff. I'm hotter than hell, but... Mm-hmm.
But that's
how's the temperature where you are?
Yeah, air temperature. Well, I'm that too, but
okay. Yes.
But it's been good. Summertime means big boats.
Boats.
Which is pretty cool. Yeah. Awesome. All right. So then that means we still need to introduce you, Ian. Here we are. Yeah. We're 10 minutes into the show and we're just getting around to wrapping up introductions.
And this is abnormal because.
Yeah, like this is unusual.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm back again. Yeah, I've been teaching all week and now it's here today, here this week. Then next week, I'm off to Romania, which will be fun. New food to try as well. There we go. There's some. I've not really managed to get much local when I've been there the last two or three times. It's all been kind of like manufactured, generalized things because I've been at conferences and stuff. So I'm looking to try and, or the hotel we stayed at last time was Turkish randomly. So we had lots of Mediterranean-y, Turkish-y kind of dishes. So getting it onto food, I'm looking forward to trying some home-cooked Romanian food. One of my colleagues is supposed to be cooking some stuff up for us. So this is... I'm looking forward to trying this stuff out. See what's what. So that'll be good fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and Romanian wine and beer. And that was good last time. So nice. Yeah.
No, and are you sure about that, Ian? That it was good. I think you have to try like a couple of times.
I do have to try it again more. Yeah. And there's some. There's also some things. Some cherry liqueur I'm supposed to try because it's supposed to be very good as well that they do over there. Now I don't know what that's all about, but. I'm going. I'll suffer for my for learning about. I mean, that's one thing about food. I try desperately wherever I go to try something that's local, something that's what people would eat where they are, not be eating. I've recently been to Rome with work as well, and we were having dinner with everybody. I was like, "What's local? What stuff people make here? I want that." I was going to have some. I mean, I've tried most of the pasta dishes on the menu, but I had some. I had a just very simple cheese. Cheese pasta dish that was out of this world. How anyone could make can take basically three things: pepper, cheese, and pasta, and make it taste so good. I had thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what I had, and that was amazing. And three ingredients.
Yep.
Food doesn't have to be complicated. Well, that was wonderful. Exactly. I came about raving.
A friend's son, like from southern Italy, from Puglia, like that's his favorite, like favorite dish.
I came back raving. Well, I thought I must be drunk or something. Said, were you drunk when you were texting us about how good this was? I said no, genuinely, it was really. I was gobsmacked at how much flavor could be got out of three really simple good ingredients. I also learned
the great thing is you can do, or I can do that too.
Yeah,
you can use sheep cheese, you can use goat cheese, you can use buffalo cheese.
Oh, yeah.
But don't underestimate how difficult it is to make a simple dish. Like that's usually the thing that trips up most people. Like they think, oh, that's easy, I can do it. But there is nothing you can hide behind. Like if you mess up one thing, if you use the wrong kind of cheese, if you add a little bit of like too much of anything, like it's done. Like there is nothing to hide behind. Like that's why like a simple dish like that is a good test of a good chef. Like, do they actually know what they're doing, or are they just pretend?
Patrice,
pecorino or parmesan.
Exactly
I'm
why.
To see what cheese goes in it.
Yeah.
And this is exactly why I am so critical of pizzas, because I don't do cheese on my pizzas. I mean, occasionally I have a pizza that has like a goat cheese on it, but no cheese. If you don't make a good pizza, it does not stand up when the cheese is off of it. But if you make a good pizza, you don't need the cheese on it. It's still a good pizza. Yep. And I think far too many places will mask their poor pizza with cheese.
Well, with cheese or with like 10,000 different things on it. So like for sure, if you throw like 70 different vegetables on it or stuff like that, or 17 different cheeses, I mean, sure, that stuff is hopefully gonna taste nice, but the pizza just still sucks. Well, that doesn't change anything, but you don't notice. If you do like a very simple margarita, I mean, there's nothing to hide behind. Either it's good or it's
not. You're back again to that. That very simple thing that you can't. You've got to have a good tomato sauce. You've got to have good cheese, and your bread's got to be great. Yeah. It's surprising. Deceptive. And talking to the Italians when I was there last week, another thing they were saying was, you know, pizzas are quite simple food. They don't have a lot of things on them, you know, and it's and the whole thing of putting sweet things on pizza is like, no, pineapple, no, don't be stupid. I mean,
I like that.
I know a lot of people like it, but the Italians, it makes them go all funny and they don't like it. They really don't like it. And the Romans, I met anyway, were not fans. Not fans at all.
The Sicilians I used to work for in college brought the recipe with them on the boat. And they were rather demanding about what the pizza is when we cooked it. They handmade their own dough. They handmade their own sauce.
Neither of which is really complicated if you know what you're doing.
But you have to do it right.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to do it right.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I mean, like pizza is a great example. Like, I mean, there is, if you ask my Italian friends, they say, like, just don't call it pizza and then you can do whatever you want. But that's their opinion on that. But like, even if it, like, there's different kinds of pizza and all of them are fine in their own way. Like a Chicago style or New York style or like Sicilian, like there's all kinds of different pizzas and like if we pide in Turkey and so on, the same principle.
I mean the Germans have one as well because I had that when I was there. The Flammkuchen.
Yeah, Flammkuchen. The principle exists everywhere, but it's fantastic. The simplicity that makes a difference. And like, do you know what you're doing? Like, I mean, I think we probably all have. I've had pizza where I was like, it was okay. Like, it wasn't bad, but it was merely okay. And usually there's like a million things on it to mask that they just don't care or don't know what they're doing.
I think in a lot of cases, they just don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
The mass-produced stuff is awful, though. Really, the sort of your Domino's, Papa John's and all that, don't do it.
No.
A fascinating thing was on TV over here that was how they do it. It was a cooking show where they were looking at mass production of food and how how Domino's get that taste, that distinctive taste, and whether you can make something yourself that replicates it or not. And they had sort of like proper chefs trying to do it and they couldn't do it. You know, I'm guessing because of the industrial scale of the mixture and the ratio of whatever to whatever else gets that particular taste and they get the bread in a particular way.
It's very simple. Mass production is not usually something that you can do in quality because and in like simple things. Because for mass production, different things are important. You have to be able to produce it fast. Otherwise, you will never get to scale. It has to be relatively cheap. I mean, the price is somewhat flexible, I would say, but not too much. And it has to last. Like, I mean, it has to somehow get from where it was produced to you through probably a lot of hands.
Yeah, I mean, from what I saw of the dough making on from the example of Domino's, they were that stuff's made in one factory and it goes out every morning fresh. I mean, that's quite impressive in terms of a distribution system.
Yeah, but it's still different. The dough has to be different in order to do that.
Yeah, the dough has to be able to survive that long rather than being literally made up in hands, tossed in the air, and then toppings thrown on it and stuck under it.
And that's one thing I mean, I've bought dough from the supermarket. Like, I've done it. Like, sometimes it's like you're just too lazy to do it, and I totally understand it. But a good pizza dough is not hard to make. Like, if you know what you're doing, it literally is like three ingredients, water, yeast, olive oil, a little bit of salt.
Oh,
five, because you also need flour for sure. The right flour, but it's not a lot of ingredients, and it's I mean, all it needs is you have to know what you're doing, and it needs a little bit of time because you need to let it proof a couple hours. But it's something, I mean, I've made a million times myself, and it's not hard to do. Especially because you can make it in advance and just let it sit. It doesn't matter if it sits for a little longer.
My brother-in-law's got himself a pizza oven for his birthday not couple of, I think last year, and we were using that over the last summer, and that was fantastic when we were down there making. He again had made pastry himself, and we spread it out, and that was great. Yeah. And it takes no time at all to cook in the pizza oven. It's fantastic fun. One of the sort of things because they're inside.
Yeah, because they're 600-700 degrees instead of 350 to 450.
Still a difference to like a proper big pizza oven with like wood and everything. There is a difference, and you can taste the difference.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to compromise somewhere. You can build that at home, but then like the pizza is really expensive because like to just fire that up is just way too expensive.
And there's all this stuff is fantastic, good quality pizza, but there's something about a dollar slice pizza in New York that just tastes so good, and I don't understand why. It's all crap from the street corner. There's all manner of wrongness in exactly the words I said. But there's something very tasty about that. Yeah. About that slice of pizza. When you're hungry and you're wandering along, you think, I'll get a dollar slice. And it's just so nice.
And the same thing might be true for things like Domino's. Like maybe like the experience you have with it and like the history you have with that, like I don't know, you come home and your dad would bring a Domino's pizza like back in the day or something. That's fine too. If you like it, if you enjoy it, that's okay too.
I mean, the thing there's also the atmosphere. You're in the middle of a really exciting city and you're sat there on the sidewalk stuffing pizza in your face, feeling a bit like an American, which for a Brit is quite exciting. It's kind of exciting. We don't like to admit it all the time, but it is kind of exciting.
Yeah.
So question for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
The best pizza you've ever had, what was it and where?
Best pizza I ever had was in Venice, Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in this little shop or pizza restaurant where they had one little table inside. It was like a little patio table, big enough for two chairs and just a counter. And I explained to the only person in there, the woman running the place, that I had a dairy allergy, but I really wanted pizza. And she was like, no problem. And
yep, here are the pills.
No, she made the most amazing pizza without any cheese on it, and it was super simple. It was like, I think, onions and mushrooms, and that was it. And the sauce, and it was over the top amazing. And this place was so small that we could see her. She walked around the counter to go to where the oven was so she could start making it. And some of the stuff she needed was sitting on the washer and dryer that was directly behind her. And it, holy crap, that was the most amazing pizza I have ever had.
I think I'd go for, surprisingly, Spain. Mm-hmm. We were on one of the Balearic Islands on holiday. And we sort of looked down the beach and there was a beach hut doing pizzas and we ordered pizza. And so we ordered some pizzas and got them. And they just, maybe again, not just it being pizza, but the atmosphere, the location, everything else. But it was really good bread, really nice toppings, really tasty sauce, loads of cheese. All the things you want from a good pizza were there. So you couldn't fault what you were given, and you were on the beach in sunshine, you know, in the evening light as the day was drawing in, and it was just fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so sometimes it's not just about the pizza.
It's not just about the pizza. It's about where it was, which was Spain. That's the thing. That's the one I particularly remember.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Ben?
I have two different answers to this. Because when you know pizza, it is more a family than an actual dish.
Mm-hmm.
I have my two personal
Italians
favorites.
Would disagree with you, by the way. But
one is a standard Sicilian style square pieces, traditional Italian recipe. There were two restaurants owned by this family. One of them closed. It's called Marco's Restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
I worked at the offshoot Genta's. It's completely authentic spices made by literal Italians who are swearing in Italian in the kitchen.
That makes it taste even better.
Jokingly, they have a mob controlled joint black up behind the bar, but it's just there's just something about authentic Italian pizza that American style pizza cannot replicate. On the other hand, I'm in the Midwest, so my my point of reference is not New York. It's Chicago and Detroit. Is another restaurant who moved from downtown to out in the burbs now, that is deep dish style, traditional American, circular or triangular instead of, square pieces where you'd see in a more authentic Italian recipe. But rust is amazing, sauce is amazing, and I've always been an all meat guy, but there's something unique about the sausage that you don't get anywhere else. It's called the Town Clock Inn. Essentially, because of some inter-family marriage, I've been going to this restaurant my entire life. But, I've had a lot of pizza. And it's just, these are the two restaurants I keep going back to. And, the reason why you see Domino's being able to offer a $7 to $10 pizza, and Capo Mafioso's hole in the wall joint is offering 30, is because the quality is nowhere the same. You're getting a homemade recipe with the smaller joints, where you're getting something that is, like you said, easy to mass produce at an okay quality. That's better than what you get in the freezer section, but not the same as you would get on, anywhere that is hole in the wall. And I have had a lot of really crappy pizzas by joints that don't have that family recipe, or did not, or just kind of trying to reproduce something. But it's just, to me, if it's something that came, right off the boat and has stood the test of time, that makes a good pizza. The same thing for the breakfast pizzas, because the one there's
wait
this,
what
Ira yeah
breakfast pizza
yeah
this is new to me.
Yes, there is this biker bar that I would have never considered before the pandemic, because I don't want to go in there and get killed.
Reasonable.
But their breakfast pizza, they, instead of using a cheese sauce, they use gravy, breakfast gravy. They put hash browns on there. It's just,
that sounds wrong.
Yeah.
I
it sounds wrong, but you put it in your mouth and it's so right.
Okay, Ben.
Many people have said that in the past.
That's a thing. And while what you're describing, I can't eat, if I could, even though it sounds wrong, I would be willing to try it because I believe you. It's probably one of those things where you're thinking this is going to not be a good life experience. And then you put it in your mouth and all you're thinking is, how have I lived this long without having this?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they so don't, you know, now that the pandemic is, I don't get it as often because, you know, I don't want to mess with the bikers, but.
Yeah.
So my all-time favorite pizza, fortunately, quite a while ago, also in Italy, in like Puglia, like so southern state, smaller city called Biseria, I think, and like at the beach basically, and it was a white pizza, so no tomato sauce. Just cheese. Ooh, there was like nothing else on it. It was literally cheese, a few cherry tomatoes, and basil, and that's it. And it was the best pizza I've ever had. I dream of it.
Yeah.
And good company and stuff like that makes a difference. Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of like an open-faced grilled cheese sandwich.
Yeah.
It kind of is, yeah. But that's a thing. Like that's a thing in like especially in southern Italy, like a white pizza. Like
I like
pizza
a white
bianco.
Pizza. Pizza Blanco. Pizza Bianco.
So,
yeah.
By the way, the second best is in Phoenix, and there's a restaurant called Pizza Bianco. Ristorante Bianco. And they make a white pizza, and I had it, and it was really good. But they're from Italy. Thing that Ben said, like these big Italian and everything, like they swear to the pizza, all of that.
Yeah. I mean, I had something very similar. But they use the also homemade Alfredo sauce instead of the traditional marinara.
No. That's not allowed. Like, don't tell that to an Italian; they would be like, "You're crazy."
They would, and equally, yeah. I've thrown another link in the chat for somewhere we went. I just remembered this was another awesome pizza at the top of England. Oh well, no, not even top of England. Sorry, the top of the United Kingdom in Scotland, on the edges, on the very edges of the coast, a place called Cromarty. There's a little pizza place, and they make this amazing one. I had one with it was called a Black Isle because that's what the area is called. It had haggis and sausage and stuff on it. Fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic. As something different. Not
what is it? Don't call it a pizza.
The bread was fantastic, and the toppings were wonderful. But it was just something very different, and it was just in a really weird place. But they're known widely as best place to buy pizza in that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
All right, just since everyone has shared local-ish favorites, and I haven't, I feel kind of obligated. So my favorite local pizza comes from a place that was kind of diagonal across the block from where I lived in Boulder. And since I don't live there anymore, I can tell everyone where this is. It's called Barchetta, and it's at the corner of Walnut and 17th in downtown Boulder. And it's a little family-owned place that opened during the pandemic. They use fresh everything. They make their own crust. It's what you would expect from a good place. And they do a vegan pizza, which has the tomato sauce, and I think it's red onions, mushrooms, and arugula. And I get that with sausage added to it. And it is an amazing pizza. And I've taken friends there before who do not have a dairy allergy. And they have said, even though they're just used to having pizza with cheese on it, this was an absolutely amazing pizza. So whenever we are all together in Colorado, if we're around Boulder, we'll run over to Barchetta's and have a pizza. Yeah.
That sounds like a plan.
It does. You know what else sounds like a plan? Talking about TSO hosts.
They sound like the right kind of company to start a website with if you have a pizza restaurant.
I agree completely. Ben, it's like you know about this company. For those of you that don't, TSO Hosts, what they do is offer web hosting. They can help you set up your domain names. And they do all the things that you need a quality web host company to do. And they have great customer support. They make it super easy for you to accomplish what you need to. And if you have a problem, they are there to take care of you. Now, why am I telling you about TSO Hosts? Because what they're doing is taking everything that they do so well and letting us take advantage of that here at the British Tech Network. So they are giving us the hosting space we need. So there's a place for the website so you can go and find everything about British Tech Network. There's a place for all the show recordings to live. So when you're ready to watch or listen to your favorite episodes, you can actually stream those. And speaking of streaming, they're giving us the bandwidth we need so we can live stream shows to you every single week. Without TSO Host support, we would not be here because the resources just go beyond what it's capable for us to manage on our own. So we really, really appreciate everything TSO Host is doing for us. And how reliable are they? Are they? Well, have you ever seen the site go down? And I'm going to venture to say no, because like the once
that's Patrice's fault.
Yeah, that's my fault.
But he got everything back up and running real fast. So no one knew. So we have never had the site go down because of a TSO host related issue ever. Yeah. They're rock solid. So here's what we need to do. We just need to go out onto our favorite social medias and thank TSO Host for being here and supporting the British Tech Network. Super simple, super easy to do. It just takes a second. And it's good karma because we are thanking them publicly. So they know we appreciate them. But that's the other part. They know we appreciate them. So let's go give them some online love. And if it turns out that you actually have a website that you want to set up, maybe you have that perfect domain name, or like Ben said, maybe you're ready to open your pizza shop, go hit up TSO Host, because like I said, they make it super easy to do all of this. And they make it easier for you to find your domain name that you want and get that registered. So get that in your cart. Then get your hosting package that you want in your cart. When you're ready to check out, add in the discount code BTN20, and you're going to get 20% off your order just because you're a BTN fan. So thank you to TSO Host for being here and supporting us. And speaking of support, Patrice, you support me so well emotionally, well, on many levels. But today, by telling people where to find the chat.
Yeah, I'm sure I can do that. So we have a really awesome live chat where you can, like when we're recording this live, which we're streaming, if you're listening to this like later on, we're streaming this live. You can join our live chat and talk to us. It's super, super easy. All you have to do, we record every Thursday, 7 p.m. UK time. We record the big show. And by the way, also every Friday, 4 p.m. UK time, we record the Mac show if you're into the Apple side of things. And tomorrow also there will be a Summer of Fun edition because we're in the Summer of Fun. And then, yeah, you head over to chat.britishtechnetwork.com and you jump in and that's it. Like, it's that easy. Like, there's really nothing to do. Like, no registration or anything complicated. Just say, take me in and you're in. So that's how easy it is. And then you can talk to us and see all the awesome links and all of like everything simply. But let's say you are listening to this in the recorded form, like on our website, in your favorite podcast player, on, I don't know, Apple Podcasts, wherever you find the content. I don't know, maybe in the future on Vision Pro or something like that. And you're like, I missed the live recording. I don't know like what they talked about in the chat. And I really would like to know. Like, not a problem. We have an awesome website hosted by TSO Host. We have a chat transcript. And when you head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat, there's a little calendar that pops up. And you have to select the date because we have to know which session, which date you want to see. And you select today's date as we're recording it, which is the 27th of July, 2023. July 27th, 2023. And if you do that, you will see everything that we've talked about.
Awesome. Thank you for doing that, Patrice.
You're welcome.
I'm glad you're back. And not just because you do the whole thing about the live chat so much better than I do.
Aww.
Yeah. All right. So we have the option of doing cool things during Summer of Fun or not. So if anyone has cool things today, now is the time for us to talk about them. By the way, I do have a cool thing, and it is themed for today's topic.
Oh, yes. I too have a food-related cool thing. Well, two related cool things.
Yeah,
well,
then yeah,
Ben, start us off.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I'm going to do something from a retailer that probably most people wouldn't think we would be hearing from during the show, especially since they only operate in the UK under the ADSA brand.
Asda,
whatever. But here in the States, Walmart surprisingly has a relatively good and extensive collection of more premium types of ground beef. One of them is the most American animal of them all, the bison. And ground bison by itself, it tends to be a little bit dry, which is why
if you do it right. And I'm sorry, continue.
Which is why I usually mix it 50-50 with Walmart's market side 50-10 ground beef. It makes for some very wonderful burgers on the grill during summer.
Ben,
so what's the difference between bison and beef then? You get, is there more flavor to it? Is it like a more gamier version of beef?
It's not gamier. Yeah, it's not gamier, but but there are less fatty.
Actually, I've had buffalo before. That's been quite good.
Bison got the nickname of buffalo because they do in some ways resemble the Asian animal.
Mm.
But, you know, you don't see around here, it's close to $9, which is actually pretty cheap for ground bison.
I've had this brand before.
Yeah.
I can't digest beef, but I can eat bison.
Yeah.
And this is a good brand. Okay, if you don't want to mix it with beef, which I can't do, and you feel like it's a little drier than you want, splash in a little bit of olive oil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, bison doesn't have a lot of fat.
Yeah,
it's quite lean.
Yeah. And that's my trick. And you can do burgers with it if you want. Anything that you would otherwise be doing with beef.
Yes.
You can substitute the bison, throw in a splash of olive oil, and you're good.
Yes, yes. I rather like it when the buffalo roams right into my stomach.
I agree. I'm not bragging here. This is simply a matter of fact. I do an amazing bison chili. And so this is like an American red chili where you have kidney beans and the ground meat and it is just awesome. Patrice,
yes.
Did we talk about my bison chili on Foodie Flashback?
We did.
I don't remember. We didn't? Oh, we did.
No, we did. We did.
Okay. It's been a while. I couldn't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And
2-3 years.
Yeah. And if anybody wants to have a more Eastern flair, they do have, they also have the rough equivalent to bison from the land down under, Wagyu.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We go.
Nice.
We're good. Nice. Good.
Yes.
All right. Next now, cool thing.
I'll take it. And that's the link I posted in for you, Jeff.
Oh, which yes. This looks really good.
This is a superb. I was looking for a recipe. I mean, I can make the tikka masala kind of sauce already, but I was looking for an easy recipe to use to make something with sweet potatoes and a way to find out what people were mixing with it, so I didn't end up with something that was too harsh or whatever. And we made this. So this was made with sweet potato and a standard potato, then a really easy sauce that came out really, really well for what it was. And so that was really great. And it's a US author. It's not even an Indian guy, to be fair, but it made for a really tasty Indian dish. And feel free to substitute sweet potatoes and things for any meat that you might like instead. Would work just as well. Preferably not a red meat. You might be better with a white meat like chicken or turkey.
I couldn't even eat red meat.
But a white meat would work. Otherwise, go with a vegetarian option. And any vegetable you have that you can bake. So squashes will work really well. Butternut mm-hmm. squash and stuff like that would be. Actually, I'm thinking of making that again with butternut squash in it.
I think it would be better with the butternut squash than the sweet mm-hmm. potatoes. But to me, sweet potatoes and yams have this heavy, overpowering flavor mm-hmm. that in mixed dishes, I don't think works very well.
They're
really soft, which in like dishes like that, it's very easy to overcook them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, in this recipe, all you do is you basically you dice it and stick it in the oven on a tray and let the sweet potato or the potato just gently cook in the oven. You make the sauce, combine the two and eat it. So you don't get the sweet potato going too soft, just enough to be tasty, but not enough to end up being more like mash, because it does end up like mash otherwise. I mean, we quite often use sweet potato as mash because it's good fun. It can be tasted that way. But we did this and I should be making it again because that was really good. And quite a nice cheaty way of making the tikka masala sauce, which I will proffer the usual story. I tell you, it's an English invention. Tikka masala is not Indian in any way, shape, or form.
Maybe Indian inspired. That's the best you can say.
It was invented in Indian. It was invented in one of the Indian, Bangladeshi, Pakistani restaurants that exist in the UK, but it was never ever home in India at all. At any point, it all came around when someone wanted some nice gravy with their tandoori chicken, and someone knocked something up. I think with Campbell's soup, and depending on who you ask, Birmingham. Or possibly Birmingham, Glasgow, and Edinburgh all claiming it as theirs.
Of course,
I think Glasgow currently is winning. Again, some Scotsman came in and said, "I want gravy with this," and they said, "Okay, yeah, we'll make you some sauce." And they whipped this thing up, and it was hugely popular. And the rest, indeed, is history.
Oh, I have my own idea of this, because this seems like the sauce would go really well with duck.
Yes,
it would. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Try it. 100%. That should work really nicely. Curry duck is good. Also, for that one, salmon. Tandoori salmon. Okay. You can make a really nice tandoori salmon as well. So you coat the meat and all your spices and then grill it. And that's awesome, that is, as well.
I mean, really badly kept secret. A lot of Indian restaurants, that's what they do. They make the sauce. And then they just add whatever to it. So that's why you see basically the same dish and then just different proteins. That's how they do it.
Yes, it's basically they got the proteins and lob it and then they'll have a bit of sauce around it. Maltese are a little bit different. That's a great big pot of gravy, essentially, that they then, again, add dependent different meats on the go for those. Mm-hmm. That's a Brummy thing, is Maltese.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And there's just something about Indian style food that, you know, I'm not someone who can take heat very well, but it's just like Indian food mixes the heat with the flavor in a way that no one else does. Now just gobble that up.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're vegetarian or mostly vegetarian like me, because I can't eat red meat at all, and I usually don't eat chicken or anything like that, like Indian food is easily the best vegetarian food you can
eat. They are awesome at making really tasty, good vegetarian food of all kinds. The meat food, it's the kind of thing where meat is the exception rather than the norm. the restaurants tend to be the other way around, where most of the food is non-meat and so, but there's some fab stuff you can do with that. And Ben, just leave out the cayenne if you don't want it as hot. It will taste just as good.
Yep.
Just leave the cayenne out. And good Indian food, another top tip, good Indian food should taste the flavors of the spices first. Yeah. Only after you've digested that should you get a little bit of heat on your tongue from the chili or the or the cayenne that's in there. If it's the other way around, that's bad Indian food.
Yeah.
Yep.
You've got to be able to taste it first. Vindaloo is bollocks, by the way. No one should eat that stuff. That's crap. That's complete crap. No one, Madras and Vindaloo is bollocks. No one should eat that stuff. It's not good.
Yeah.
It's not good. But anything else, and there is plenty of really tasty Indian food that doesn't require you to suffer the ordeal of trying to work your way through something that's far too hot.
Yeah, and by the way, I mean, when we say Indian food, that's almost like saying American food. There is 17 million kinds of Indian food. Like the other day, I went with my mom here in Vienna to a southern Indian restaurant, eating some dosa and stuff.
Oh, I love dosa.
It's so good. It's so different. Like, there's no curry or anything like that.
I had dosa when I was down in London just recently. There was a brilliant dosa place I found on Brick Lane. They did dosa, and I took my Romanian colleague with me there. I said to him, you're going to have to try this. This is really good. Said, okay, well, off we went. And
it's so rare
and
to
he
find.
Was amazing, and he was, he likes a spicy, he likes spicy food. So he was, this is really, really good. Oh, yeah. And that was not, a dosa, for anyone who doesn't know, is a rice pancake.
Yeah.
It's a thin, really thin, massive roast pancake. And then it comes with a series of small dali, they call them, which is a little series of different kinds of sambar sauces and dips, and then there's normally some kind of key one that will go in the dose if you don't get it plain, and then you eat it with your hands.
The traditional one is potatoes and lentils.
It's a
potato, basically.
Basically, it's a dal. It's a very simple dal. Mm-hmm. And and those are fantastic as well. So good, so good. That's happening more now. Initially, when Indian food came to the West, a lot of the people bringing it here were from the north of the country. So a lot of the current food we got at first was very much from the northern parts and from Bangladesh and Pakistan. And they eat much more heavier meat, much more. There's more meat in the diet there. There's more heavier dishes. It's, again, what grows where they live. Now we're getting more southern Indian food coming around. They're more veg and more fish because that's, again, further down, what's more prevalent. So you eat what you've got. It's that kind of thing.
The best dosa I've had so far is in San Francisco, Rupi Palace. Small, family run. I think, Jeff, you probably went with Doc because that's
I've been there. To go. It's a really great place.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think it was Rupi or Udupi or something like that.
I don't remember, but it sounded right when you said it.
10 years that I've been there, but I still
have to go and try. I
still
have to
dream
go and try
of that,
that
place.
All right, Patrice. I've been sitting here looking at
my
cool thing, and it just looks beautiful.
Yep.
And it's beautiful. Have no idea how to use it, but I want to know about your cool thing.
Okay, so my cool thing is not about cooking, but it's about making coffee.
So what you're saying, after eating all this food, we have to have something to wash it down with.
Absolutely.
No, not necessarily. It can also just be like, if you really like, I mean, I'll admit it, I'm a coffee snob. I would rather not drink coffee than drink crappy coffee, like American whatever diner style coffee. Like, just like, no, just give me a glass of water and I'm fine. Like, just don't do it.
We're changing that to your official title.
Yeah, okay, I'm fine with that. So my cool thing is the espresso machine I have. And there is like a million of them. Like, it's a professional, well, semi-professional, like the professional ones are bigger. It's a scaled down version of a professional machine. It's like from a company. It's originally, the company was a Italian company, and it worked with a German company together the Italian company was doing like professional, like restaurant cafes, like that scale. And they wanted to do something more for the prosumer and consumer market. So they worked with a German company, hence the name. It's called ECM, Espresso Company in Milano. So from Milano. And then I think a couple, like 10 years ago or something, they split again. So the Italian side is doing professionals and the German side is doing the prosumer once again. So it's mostly German engineering. But it's built like an Italian machine. They're super simple. And I can tell you one thing when it comes to like professional or semi-professional espresso machines, simpler is better. Because those machines, I mean, I've had one before that I sold when I moved to the US. That one was probably about 15 years old and it was going, it's still going strong today. So like many years later, still going strong. A friend of mine has it. And I mean, they easily last 20, 30 years. And you can only do that if it's easy to fix. And easy to fix means anybody should be able to fix it, like any somewhat professional. So that's the thing about like these espresso machines. Like if you're an electrician or like a plumber or something like that, you can fix this machine. Because there is nothing really complicated. It's like it's a couple of pipes. There's a little bit of electricity and like a heating element and like a sensor or two. But there's nothing super crazy about it. The one I put in, that's the one I have. That's, let's say, the higher end version. So if you're willing to spend like whatever $2,500 or something on the machine, do that. As I said, lasts 20, 30 years easy. Like if you treat it well, it lasts forever. Because there's very little that can break. Like, I mean, sure, like here or there, you might have to replace a part or two over the years. But like nothing expensive or like nothing that really breaks. Like, I don't know, there's a cable maybe that needs replacing after 20 years or something. That, there's cheaper versions of that for sure. And I always recommend if someone really wants to get into this, you don't have to buy new. There is, because they last so long, there's a really good market, a solid market of used machines. There's also more brands than this one. There's like Ranchillo, I think, is one. There's a bunch of like well-known. If you look at like cafes in your area, like the, let's say, the third wave cafes, like the smaller independent ones, and you look at the brands, most of those professional brands have consumer or prosumer versions that are quite good. So like, but you don't have to go with this one, but this actually is not outside of Europe, not so well known, but you can buy it in the US. I bought mine in the US. So bought it in the US, brought it here, actually had the, like all the like electrical things replaced with the 220 version, which wasn't, I mean, it was a bit expensive because they basically replaced half of the machine, but wasn't a big deal. Took like 2 hours or something, 2 or 3 hours. I can see. So yeah, it's like I said, the thing, you have to learn how to use it. And I would only recommend it if you think you will enjoy it. Like if you are the type of person, like, I just want a quick coffee and I don't care, or I don't care too much about it, get like one of those machines, like you could put on the counter and it makes a coffee, like
Nespresso things.
Yeah, no, well, not Nespresso maybe, or like one of those like semi-automatic, like the whatever, I'm blanking on the brands. Like
one of the drip coffee makers.
Well, automated. Drip coffee, or even like there's these automatic espresso machines, like from, I think, what's the Swiss brand, Jura. Seiko, I think, is one. There's a bunch of like those. You see it like sometimes in like offices, like those type of machines that have like the grinder and everything built in. It's still making technically something like an espresso. It's decent. But said, if that's fine for you, go for it. But if you think you will, and for me, I mean, after I think over 10 years ago, I bought my first machine. I still to this day really, really enjoy making like a cappuccino and espresso, and it's like, it's for me, it's a challenge to make it a little bit better every day and learn. I mean, after over 10 years of two, three, four a day, probably sometimes four, like two at minimum, I still enjoy making it. For me, it's like, it's just relaxing. The machine slows you down because it's not, give me a coffee, I have 30 seconds. Like you need at least, like the machine has to be heated up for like 15 minutes at least before. Otherwise, like it's not hot enough. It needs like all the metal part, it's all metal. All the metal parts need to heat up and like they retain the heat. And then like it takes at least for a cappuccino 5 minutes to make it for me. Like start to finish. I think the making itself is like 2 minutes or something, but like the whole thing, getting everything ready, getting the cup and the milk and all of that, probably like 5 minutes.
Zen and the art of coffee making.
Yeah. And I do that between meetings. I'll like, I have 5 minutes and I'll be like, okay, I have 5 minutes. I'll go to the kitchen, make my cappuccino, really relax, unwind, come back, and then the next meeting starts. So it's just, it's really enjoyable. And I mean, you appreciate the craft of good coffee. You start seeking out the good coffee places locally. So nice. It's not for everybody. I've said I wouldn't recommend dropping this much money in like first time and thinking, and you don't know, like just get something
like, that makes starter sense.
Cheaper. The grinder is almost as important as the machine, by the way. It's actually more important. And fortunately, not as expensive.
Yeah.
But still expensive for what it is.
I suppose the beans is the critical bit, isn't it?
Yeah, $500 for a grinder, given what the machine costs, is not that much, but it's still expensive for a grinder.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but they're simpler and easier things to start with. Like, you don't have to drop that much money immediately. I wouldn't have done it.
Awesome. Okay. So, my pick sticks with our food theme. In my old place, my kitchen was so small that I'm certain at some point it was what in the US we call a half bath, which is a toilet and a sink and nothing else. And it would have been a small one. So not much room in my kitchen. Out of necessity, I needed to find a more efficient way to do a lot of oven related things without taking up much counter space. And so I found this toaster oven from Panasonic, and it's their Flash Express toaster oven that uses infrared instead of heating coils. And so when you set the temperature on it, you don't wait for it to heat up, because as soon as the lights are on, that's the temperature you have. And it has a light on the top and on the bottom. So you have even heating throughout the oven, and it goes up to 500 degrees. So I have these little single serving pizza pans, and I have made little pizzas for myself in this oven, and it has worked great. I've nice. Baked like 4 cookies at a time in it. I do toast in it. This is my tater tot oven. I've roasted vegetables in it. I've baked fish in it. I've used this for basically everything that I would otherwise use an oven for, except for something where you need to have the potentially longer cook times and you're going to have bigger things. Like if I were to do a pie or make a cake, something like that, then I would want a regular oven for that. But for $150, I have an incredibly versatile little countertop oven that I don't have to wait for it to heat up, and I don't have to worry about it burning things if I don't go back to the oven as soon as the timer goes off, because it shuts off the heat elements for you.
Yeah. If you do have like a proper full-sized oven, sometimes this is good to have, because if you're alone, you're doing something for one person, the big oven is like just a massive amount of wasted energy.
And yes, and since a lot of the times I'm cooking just for me, I still use this. It's on the counter here in my new place, where I have a full-size kitchen and regular size appliances, and I use this almost daily.
I could also see people traveling with this, by the way. Because it's so small. I mean, you can take it in your camper van.
Oh, yeah. That's true. You could totally pop this in your camper. Take it from home up to the cabin that you're going to stay at, assuming the cabin has electricity. Yeah.
Yeah, even if not, I mean, if you have like a
power plug it into a generator.
Sort, yeah, generator or something. Like, since it's so small, it probably doesn't need a lot of energy.
It's running from lights and not heating coils. So,
Do you know if they make a larger size of this?
That's a really good question. I don't know.
Because I have a giant Oster.
Yeah.
That I'm looking to replace. Like it is, bake a freaking turkey in it, large.
Okay. You could definitely not do that. You could do like a small game bird in this, but definitely not a turkey. Also, the silver one, which is what I have, that's the $149 one. The black and the white ones cost $20 more.
Why? Just for the color.
Yeah, just for the color. We want a red cooker. That was more expensive than buying a white cooker. It's just the way it is.
Yeah. So, all right. Awesome. We all did food related cool things.
Mm-hmm.
So, Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, I'm here every week on the Big Show on Thursdays and also on the Mac Show on Fridays. Everything I'm doing, all the podcasts, including Foodie Flashback, the projects, the social media links, like literally everything, you can find on my website, thepatrice.com. And yeah, I'll pimp Foodie Flashback since this was a takeover episode.
Yes.
If you want to listen to really cool people, and I still have to set up an interview with Ben, like as soon as I have my internet, we'll do that. But I've done one with Ian, with Jeff, and with Ewan, and with like a ton of other really cool people. I interview people about food and food related stories and memories, and you can find that podcast on foodieflashback.com.
Awesome. All right, Ben, where can people find you?
Well, Jeff, you can find me on the 10,000 different social medias at Ben Rathig. It pays to be the only person with my name on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, you can find my thoughts, usually on tech, at Rathig.tech. On Tuesday night, you can find me on this little show called Mac Voices with Mr. Chuck Joyner. Thursday nights, you can find me on In Touch with iOS with some Dave Ginsberg guy. I don't know, never heard of him. And of course, Thursday and Friday, depending where you are, afternoon or morning, you can find me here on the British Tech Network.
Awesome. All right. And Ian, where can people find you?
Me? I can usually be found here on the Big Show. I'm in the Slack room. You'll see I've been talking to Bob today. And I'm generally around in there. Starting to try and post more in there when I try and remember to do it. So if you want to reach out and talk to me, I'm around there. Otherwise, I'm normally doing things for Veeam somewhere. When I point the right side, I can never remember to do that. Still getting useless at that. So, but yeah, it's up there. And so I'm going to be away for a couple of weeks coming up. I've got a week for a team meet over in our European HQ, and then I'm going to be back here. And then I'm going to sunny Wales for more different food. Again, eating some of the local delicacies there, including leeks, obviously, if I'm going to Wales.
Awesome.
Lamb and leeks, if you're going to Wales, two of the finest exports from that part of the world. So, oh, yeah, and then I'll be back again. Summer of fun will probably be over by then.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to plan it so you come back and we'll tell you, sorry, you missed out.
Yes. And now we're talking about Samsung phones that are exactly the same as last
time. Same as last time. Yeah. No,
right.
Exactly.
So you won't have missed anything.
No. No, I'll have to dredge out another AI story that I don't want to talk about, but it seems like a reasonable idea. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Keep the foodie flat. Keep the any of the stories that I suggested from the pot for when I'm back. If we're still looking for material, then I'll join in.
Yeah.
Sounds
that's
good.
A good point. If anybody has topics for the Summer of Fun for the Big Show or the Mac Show, reach out to us. Show.
Yeah, let us know. Yeah, emails. Drop them in the Slack room. Send them to us on social media, whatever.
Yeah, we'll take them.
Yep.
Always fun to see.
Always good. Yeah, completely.
All right. So we got through everyone else. So that means it's my turn now. All right. So social medias, I'm Jay Gamut on basically everything. The places I'm most active right now are Mastodon and Instagram. And then for shows, most Tuesdays on Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live. Then and then most Thursday evenings on Dave Ginsburg's In Touch with iOS. Then here for me, Thursdays right around lunchtime, The Big Show. Then back again on Friday for me in the mornings on The Mac Show. And then also Brian Chaffin and I record The Context Machine. I think that's all the main shows today. I don't think I missed any of the main shows. All right. So with that, thank you so much for being here. The three of you are awesome. And what a wonderful way for me to kick off, getting ready to kick off the weekend. And it's just so much fun to hang out with all of you all the time. So everyone else, thank you for being here and being part of the show, whether you're watching or listening live, participating in the chat room, whatever. We're just so happy that you're part of this. Everyone that watches or listens to the show later, thank you for being part of the BTN family as well. And Tioso host, thank you for being here and supporting us. Everyone, give them some online love. Ewan, thank you for being you. Muller, thank you for making sure we have people for shows. And I believe those are all the thank yous that I want to make sure that I get through every week. I hope I didn't miss anything. And I guess I'll wrap up by saying, don't forget to join us next Thursday again for the Big Show. Also, the Mac Show is tomorrow. So that would be Friday. And we are doing Summer of Fun for both shows. So everyone, thank you for being here and have an awesome weekend.